Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Ty Bannerman. Well, both Father's Day and Mother's Day are now behind us, but what if you didn't have a great relationship with your parents? What if you don't have children? New Mexico families take many forms, from grandparents raising grandchildren to single parents, same-sex parents, and folks whose parents or children are no longer a part of their lives. On this week's Let's Talk New Mexico, we're talking about family dynamics and why it's important to recognize and honor different family makeups in our state, both socially and legally. We're going to talk to advocates who are working to change legal definitions in our legislature, folks who support people whose families have rejected them due to factors beyond their control, and the executive director of the Children's Grief Center, who works with children who have suffered one of the hardest losses of all, the death of a parent. And we will be taking your calls and emails. Do you come from a family that doesn't fit the traditional nuclear makeup, father, mother, and kids? Tell us what was special about that arrangement. Or have you faced rejection from your own family due to your sexual orientation or gender identity? We'll have folks on hand who can help provide you with some resources for dealing with such a difficult circumstance. You can email us at letstalk@kunm.org or call in live 505-277-5866. My first guest is Leon Powell, a bilingual trainer at the Transgender Resource Center of New Mexico. Good morning, Leon. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Ty. Thank you.
So coming out as trans is probably one of the hardest things that a person can do. And unfortunately, families may not be as supportive as we would like them to be during such a tough time. Could we start with your story of coming out trans and how your family reacted?
Sure. I grew up in Oaxaca, Mexico, and I just remember not having much understanding of my gender or why I felt the way that I felt. Mm-hmm. And I knew I wasn't a girl pretty young, maybe around age 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have the resources or people to talk to about that. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until, it was a very difficult time for me, especially once I hit puberty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my body began to change, and I just really didn't understand what was happening with my body, and just felt very extremely uncomfortable with the changes and with mm-hmm. my body, and having nobody to really talk to about it. It was a pretty dark time right. in my teenage years and very young adulthood. Mm-hmm. Then I moved to Albuquerque in 1998, and by age 2003. By the year 2003, I'd had already, you know, first come out as gay, and mm-hmm. then started building community. And then after a couple of years of that, in 2003, I met another trans man. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, I felt myself reflected back to me. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sent me on a journey of really right. questioning, finding that there were choices and resources mm-hmm. For me, and also figuring out is this who I am? Is this like my journey now?
And how was your family? How did they deal with this change?
Growing up, they just, you know, they had no idea what to do with a trans kid.
Yeah.
So my dad was kind of hands off. My mom, I do remember with my mom, she, you know, kept trying to turn me into a lady, mm-hmm. and it just wasn't working out. So we would fight about, you know, my not wanting to wear feminine clothes or behave in ways that just were not feminine enough. Or, mm-hmm. So it was there was a lot of friction in that sense. I grew up feeling that I wasn't loved, and mm-hmm. I didn't know what was wrong with me.
Right.
I used to be like, there's something about me that is not lovable yeah. and acceptable. But I don't know exactly what it is, because, you know, it was about who I am. It wasn't anything that I was doing or intentionally trying to mm-hmm. to do something that I wasn't supposed to. It was just who I was. And eventually, I came out as gay, and my mom had, you know, kind of a hard time with that.
Sure.
The rest of my family, at least as far as my mother's side of the family in Mexico, mm-hmm. my father's side of the family there from the United States, but I don't have much relationship with them. They're just, mm. you know, pretty conservative and definitely not accepting of who I am.
Right.
But I never really had much of a connection with them anyway. But my father was pretty, like, Again, pretty hands-off, like he wasn't accepting, but also wasn't very involved.
Right.
And my mother, she had a very difficult time with my being trans also. She didn't understand what it meant. When I first told her, she was mad at me, and I was mad at her for being mad at me. Yeah. We were mad at each other. And then I finally told Mom, can we just sit down and talk about this?
Right.
And what it came down to finally was that she was worried that I wasn't going to be happy, that somebody was going to hurt me, that I wasn't going to have employment or a partner. So basically her defensiveness and everything that was going on was just her loving me and being afraid that I wasn't going to have a good life.
And you mentioned that it was meeting other trans folks that kind of helped you become more okay with yourself. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. It was definitely meeting other LGBTQ people. Mm-hmm. I started going to the what was called at the time Under 21 group.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's called U21, and it's a support group for LGBTQ youth 21 and under that is run by Common Bond, and that's been around for many, many years. So I started going to that group, and immediately from the very first meeting, I felt like I belonged and I was like a normal person.
Right.
And I really connected with the facilitators a lot. And I feel like that's having left Mexico and finding a peer group really saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think I would be where I am today if I hadn't found, other people that helped me feel like, oh, I'm actually normal. Like, whatever's going on with me is okay. So first, I thought it was just about my sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as I mentioned, a few years later, I still knew something was going on. I just wasn't sure what it was. I didn't have the language for it. There's still, this was, in the early 2000s, the internet was around, but still wasn't a lot of resources, YouTube, everything that's available today. But it was meeting yet another trans person and then beginning to talk to other trans people and began seeing a therapist to talk about my gender that I really began to heal in that sense.
Right. And now you are a trainer at the Transgender Resource Center of New Mexico. I know sometimes when people come out as trans, their families outright reject them, and that must be a very hard thing to deal with. Can you tell me about some of the stories you've heard from folks you've worked with at the center?
Yeah, so I'm actually also a facilitator for one of the support groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I get to hear, I would say, more stories of people being rejected or just having a hard time at home with their families, sometimes with their partners. Some folks have children, and sometimes the children are having a hard time.
Sure.
But we do have quite a few young folks who do struggle with parents that are outright, resistant, rejecting to just parents who are like very uncomfortable, or even like teasing, the kid about them not really being trans or being confused or things like that.
So what kind of effect can that have on someone?
There's data. There's definitely data that shows that, suicide ideation, self-harm, depression is much higher in trans youth that don't have supportive home environments. And then as far as people that I've known personally that come to the group and other folks in the community that I've interacted with, there's definitely a lot more feelings of like a type of isolation, that's not quite the same isolation that we all felt last year, right? But more of like this isolation within oneself.
Right.
A feeling like, who do I go to? Who do I turn to? How do I even talk about this? Is this something, am I a lovable person? Like, is there something wrong with me?
Right.
Is there something that I can fix? People feeling disappointed of not having the support of the parents. These are people that are supposed to be there to teach you, guide you, love you unconditionally, and to have them be the ones that reject you can be very, very hard.
So what can folks in this really tough situation do to find the support that they need to heal?
It depends on where they are and what, tools people may have at hand. Here in Albuquerque, there are quite a few resources. Now, you know, a lot of them in person are coming back to being in person. Like, we're actually at the Transgender Resource Center, we're going to start moving back into having our support groups in person. Mm-hmm. And there are other spaces in Albuquerque that also serve youth. And also some have support for parents as well. Like, the Common Bond also has a parents support group. Transgender Resource Center has a planet support, parents support, mm-hmm. support group. PFLAG's been around for decades also. Mm-hmm. Outside of New Mexico, Albuquerque, I know they're in Santa Fe, the Mountain Center has a couple of programs for youth. And I don't know much about outside of Albuquerque, unfortunately.
Right.
But folks who are outside of these areas, there's, you know, if people are able to go online, there are a lot of just the resources, websites, forums, videos of people talking about the transition. There are support groups that meet online. Mm-hmm. In fact, the groups that we're doing at the Transgender Resource Center, we are going back to in person, but we are keeping also groups online because we found that there were people who are now able to access the group because it's online, so they can log on from anywhere, where before, if it was only in person, they couldn't come at all.
And is that, now you mentioned that finding those, that community in support groups and otherwise was really helpful to you. Do you find that it makes a big difference for kids in the same situation or people in the same situation?
I'd say in general, yes. Mm-hmm. There are some people who have a hard time connecting online.
Right.
And I know, for example, in the support group, I know there are people who, some people have taken a whole year between finding the group to finally having, you know, the feeling comfortable enough to come to an actual meeting, because they might be struggling with social anxiety or just feeling stuff like, what if I find that this is a space where I also don't belong? Mm. What if it's not who I am? And then I have to keep figuring it out. I am also part of a few groups on Facebook, and mm-hmm. I see they're very active. Right. To be honest, I'm part of more groups for folks who are trans, folks who are 40 and older. Because I'm 42,
right?
So I'm not as active with the young, in the youth groups. But I know there's plenty of them, and I know the ones that I'm in part of, they're very active. Like, people are always posting questions, so there's definitely a lot of support of people, supporting each other and kind of guiding each other through tricky situations of just navigating life as a trans person.
And you mentioned that there are parent support groups as well. Obviously, like, if a parent has outright rejected their child over something like this, there might not be a chance for healing, but maybe sometimes it's just a question of ignorance and needing education. Is that often the case?
Yes, I would say definitely yes. I mean, I wouldn't be able to say how many, mm-hmm. What percentage or things like that, but I definitely have known. I mean, that's an example of my own mother, right? That she came around once we were able to have talks about it and really understand what each other's discomfort feelings were coming from. And there have definitely been cases of different families who have come together once the parent is able to ask the questions and kind of process through their own feelings. One of the things that I often tell the people that come to the support group is that, you know, when you begin your transition, you probably have had some, you know, months, if not years, of thinking about it, I mean, processing and preparing yourself for it. But when we come out to our family, for them, for a lot of them, it might be a new thing, or we're hoping that they wasn't going to come. So when a person begins transition, they're basically taking with them everybody else that's around them on this journey.
Makes sense.
Some people are maybe less prepared for that. So it does, I think it does require this, showing some grace to each other as we all move through this learning process and do the best to support each other. And for parents and other family members, it has been just a matter of finding other peers, other parents that have trans children or a trans partner to support them. And like, your confusion is valid. Your grief is valid. Everything you're feeling is valid, and this person needs your support.
Well, thank you so much, Leon. We are going to go to a quick break. I do want to point out that the resources that Leon mentioned, some of them are already on the website for this show, and we'll be adding more after the show itself over at KUNM.org. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman, and we will be back in a moment.
Support comes from REDW, an Albuquerque-based and locally owned CPA and advisory firm dedicated to serving the needs of New Mexico businesses and individuals since 1953. Complete details about services at REDW.com.
Support comes from Il Vicino Restaurants in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, open for indoor and patio dining, Sunday through Thursday, 11 till 9, Fridays and Saturdays, 11 till 10. Delivery, carryout, and curbside service available. IlVicino.com.
Music by 19th and 21st century women coming up, some scintillating new music for violin by Missy Mazzoli, and this gorgeous quintet from 1840 by Louise Farrenc. I'm Fred Child. Join me for the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman, and we are talking about how family dynamics can change in New Mexico. Did you lose a parent when you were a kid, or have you lost your partner and are now having to take on family roles as a single adult? How are you dealing with these situations? Give us a call at 277-5866 and tell us about it. I have an email that we just received from Cicely. Of course, now it's... there it is. And she says, at nearly 70, I still experience emotional struggle at certain holidays. At times, they have experienced rather severe depression based on not having a family. And although I'm immensely thankful that I've been able to have and maintain wonderful friends, Cicely finds it very unaffirming when those friends tell them, well, friends are just like family. She says it's simply not true. Oftentimes, friends are much more valuable than family, but they are not just like family. I would much prefer to have friends affirm that it is sometimes pretty devastating to not have a supportive, participating family, and those times are often at holidays. Now, I'm going to bring in another guest now, Jade Richardson-Bach. She is the executive director of the Children's Grief Center and the co-author of Parenting Through Grief. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us today, Jade.
Good morning, Ty. Thank you for having me. What a big subject.
I know, it's a lot. Probably several shows worth, really. So losing a parent or other close loved one is obviously a very difficult thing for a child to experience. And like Cicely mentioned, days like Father's Day or Mother's Day can really bring a lot of those feelings to the front. Can you tell me how those days can affect someone who's grieving?
Absolutely. And I think Cicely really described it well. You know, those holidays and the expectations that we carry with them, right? That's the way we believe they should go because of things we saw in, you know, social media or on Hallmark movies, you know, that's what gets us. That's what makes it really, really hard is when our expectations and our hopes and dreams don't live up to our reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do families need to understand about these holidays and how to help someone who's grieving, going through a grieving process, especially a child?
I'm so glad you asked. So I'll take that in two parts, and I'll take how do you help somebody with a grieving kid or who is a grieving kid or adult. And, you know, we like to invoke the great Mr. Rogers a lot in our work. And, of course, he said, if it's mentionable, it's manageable. Mm-hmm. And so often when families experience a death, it's especially with children in the home, it's often a unexpected death, right? Because young children aren't supposed to lose parents, and parents aren't supposed to lose young children, right? That defies our expectations. Mm-hmm. And so the rest of our community, you, me, everybody else who maybe didn't have that experience, we're kind of frozen, right? We don't know what to do or say, and don't want to do the wrong thing. So we often default to just kind of acting like it didn't happen, or falling back on platitudes like, you know, it's okay, he's not suffering anymore.
Right.
Or, you know, God needs another angel, or there's always a plan, or, you know, your mom needs you to be the man of the house now. Mm-hmm. And what we know from working with grieving families for 20 years now, this is the 20th anniversary of the Children's Grief Center, is that all that stuff might help the person who's saying it feel a little better, but the person who's hearing it can actually feel more isolated.
Right.
So if you can say that helps, really start with getting humble. Man, this must be hard. I don't know what this is like. I want you to know that I care about you.
And Jade, a quick technical question here. Are you by any chance on a headset or a speakerphone?
No.
Okay. Great. We're having just some audio quality issues here. But so I'm sorry to interject that, but let's return to this question of what kind of issues arise from a child who's going through unresolved grief?
What kind of issues can arise?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, the death of a loved one in childhood is, it's an ACE. It's an adverse childhood event, and mm-hmm. it can follow you through the rest of your life. And, you know, there are all sorts of scary statistics out there. There's correlation between childhood bereavement and lifelong struggles with depression, and then also with unhealthy coping techniques to kind of numb the pain, right?
Right.
Like substance abuse. There's often a correlation between the death of a parent in the home before the age of 18 and then involvement with the criminal justice system, either as a juvenile or later as an adult.
Right. And how can people go through a more healthy grieving process?
You know, so I think it starts with the community around you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when our kids have experienced a traumatic event, they need at least one adult. And it may or may not be the primary caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a teacher or a neighbor or a coach or an aunt or an uncle.
Right.
They need at least one adult who can be a steady, consistent, and kind presence in their lives. So
mm-hmm.
that could be you or me.
So it's just a person who is in a position to care.
Right, to care, to listen, to validate. And of course, if you can access and engage in special services like support groups
mm-hmm.
for grieving young people, camps, education, there's tons of resources out there about supporting grieving kids and families. That is the icing on the cake.
And I feel like, from what I've read, a lot of times people don't understand that children don't grieve in the way that perhaps adults might expect. Could you talk a little bit about that and how people can be more understanding about that?
Yeah, you know, that's such a good point, Kai. You know, kids and grownups are different. And when adults experience a significant loss or traumatic event, you know, they've really been laid pretty low, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they will experience consistent sorrow, anger, all those hard feelings that we wrap up in a big word called grief, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll experience that for as long as they do until they feel better. Now, with kids, it is more of an up and down experience. So,
right.
And it changes. They re-experience components of those hard grief feelings as they go through new developmental stages because they're maturing and they're understanding the impact of the loss a little bit differently. And this can be super confusing for the adults who are like, hey, your dad died 5 years ago. Why are you so upset about it today?
Right.
Or you were so young, you never even really knew your mother. Why is it a problem now that you're turning 16? Well, when children grieve, and they go through these new developmental stages, they understand the loss differently, they realize, oh, my peers have somebody to help them with their algebra homework or teach them how to drive, and I don't have that. They also lose the potential for having a relationship with that person. And that
right.
can also be hard for adults to understand. You know, say the person that they lost was never really in their life or was maybe not a great parent. Maybe
yeah.
you know, they had their own struggles and they didn't have a great relationship. So the parent that stuck around and the parent that raised them can often feel like, you know, this is really unfair. They're sobbing and sad and angry that they're missing their dad, but you know, their dad wasn't in their life for 10 years and I've been there every day.
Right.
But what they're grieving is the potential for that relationship.
Right. And do you find that a lot of times maybe adults have a hard time understanding that concept? When I think of grief, I think about grieving a person that I knew. And the idea of grieving an absence seems very foreign to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it is hard for all of us to understand things that we haven't personally experienced. And I think that's just natural. You know, like you referenced the lady Cicely, who wrote in her experience of, you know, living, you know, through the age of 70 and struggling with these holidays where family should be present and people saying things like, oh, well, your friends are just like your family. Well, that's not the case for her.
Right.
That's not what she wanted. She had this dream of being a part of a family and all of the pieces that came with that in her mind. And that potential is what she's grieving.
Right. Do you have questions about the grieving process or do you need to find resources and support? We want to hear from you. 277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org. Now, Jade, are there some things that people should not say to children or parents who are grieving a loss?
I have a long list, but I want to preface it with, you know, kids always give you a do-over. Uh-huh. And again, if you approach the conversation humbly, like, hey, I care for you. I'm sorry you're going through this. I wish I could help. And, you know, maybe ask, what do you need? And I mean, approaching the conversation humbly and coming back to it again and again is always good.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Some people are worried that, oh, I don't want to remind them that their loved one died because they seem like they're having a really great day. Well, trust me, even in the midst of a really great day, you never forget that loss is never far from your mind.
Right.
And so it's always okay to just be like, hey, I'm checking in on you. I'm thinking about your mom or your dad today. One thing that's always very helpful that kids love to hear are stories and specific memories about their person. Like, I remember that your mom always grew the best irises, or I remember one time when your dad and I went to Sonic and he ate 3 footlongs in a row. You know, tell those kids those stories. Now, you asked about what not to say.
Right.
I kind of gave you a little list of platitudes, you know, before those kind of things that we fall back on. You're the man of the house now. God needed another angel. Oof. Everything happens for a reason. Mm. Don't worry. You're going to grow through this. Yeah, shove it. Shove all of that. Then, you know, sometimes, you know, kids will say to other kids, too, things like, well, I know just how you feel because my dog died.
You're right.
Or kids will say to other kids, you're so lucky that your dad is dead because mine just grounded me and I hate him.
Wow.
Those are also really painful things for grieving kids to hear. And they don't know how to respond to that because they want to be connected to their peers, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we teach families at the Children's Grief Center. We say, hey, you know, you've gone through this really significant loss and you know things that other people might not know yet. And you can decide if you want to teach them, hey, it's not helpful for me to hear you say this. Comparing my mom's death to your dog's death is not the same. You know, you can get another dog. I can't get another mom.
Right.
Or you can not train them and just understand that they're coming from a place of kindness and compassion. They just don't know any better.
Right. Now, can you tell me about some of the programs that the center offers and how they can help with kids and parents who are going through this process?
Absolutely. So, you know, our kind of core program for 20 years has been support groups that meet throughout the school year. And those happen in the evenings from September through May. And they're for all ages and stages. So littles, starting at age 5, going all the way up to young adults. We have special groups for teens. And then we always have had groups for the caregivers bringing the children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the last couple of years, and particularly with the pandemic that we've all experienced, we have added in additional programs that are for adults not connected to children.
Oh, interesting.
So we have support groups for adults grieving a loss of a loved one due to COVID-19.
Wow.
We have a men's group just for men who are grieving any significant death. And we have several others. They're listed on our website, griefnm.org. And then also our children's programs are detailed on childrensgrief.org/events. Because in the summer, we do special stuff. And I'd like to share with everybody that we have a day camp for young people happening outside of Gallup in July.
Okay.
And all of our programs are free.
And when kids get together in a situation where they have this shared common experience of grief, I mean, how does that help them heal?
Well, you know, the number one thing is you look around and you say, now I know I'm not alone. Now I know I'm not the only one. You know, and I think that, Ty, your whole show here, the everything we're kind of trying to dig into about, you know, how do you deal with Father's Day and Mother's Day, and holidays, when you feel like you're the outsider, you feel like nobody gets you, you're not connected to a family or a group that loves you and cares about you and understands you in that way. You know, when there's a death in the family and everybody's responding to that death differently and they're all struggling with their own feelings of grief, and then there's like one caregiver left and she's grieving her own loss and she has to hold it together for everybody else, it is natural and normal for that family to struggle with supporting each other.
Right.
And so, you know, getting extra help, coming into a support group of people your age who've been through something similar feels like a sigh of relief.
Right.
It feels like, oh, now I get it. And the thing is, the thing that's different about support groups as opposed to therapy, because we're not therapists, I would say the service we provide is definitely therapeutic, but it's not therapy. It helps you find your ground, you know, after your ground's been ripped out from under you. But it's about finding the competence in the individual and them sharing it out with the group, you know. So like those examples of everything that kids have shared with what their peers said to them that really sucked, you know, at school.
Right.
Those all came from grief groups, from kids saying, man, this really horrible day today at school, and this happened and this happened. And instead of them going home and punching their fist through a wall, they're coming to a group where they can share it and other kids can support them and then offer their own experience.
Right. Now, I wonder, we at KUNM, we love to talk about policy. And so I wonder if we could maybe zoom out for a moment and say, are there policy changes that you feel we could have in our state, in our society, that could better acknowledge how grief works and to help people get through such a tough time? I'm thinking of like bereavement is like 3 days. Bereavement leave is often like 3 days if you get it all, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, you're referring to, you know, when you are an adult and you experience a death and you get 3 days off work and you come back and no one looks you in the eye anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. So there's a couple of things, right? Yeah, we can definitely implement some policies, but along with that has to come education and understanding. Grief is normal.
Right.
Grief is it's not something that needs to be treated. It's a normal response to a loss. And you can grieve any significant loss at any time. Now, the reason why I think a policy approach is important in New Mexico is that we're actually second in the nation for childhood bereavement per capita.
Oh,
so
no
one
kidding.
In 10 of our children, nationwide, we're second, we're just behind West Virginia, one in 10 of our children will experience the death of a caregiver or a sibling before the age of 18.
Right.
And that number skyrockets when we look at young people up to the age of 25. But policy suggestions, the first place that I would start is with implementing this program called Grief Sensitive Schools Initiative in every school in our state, where we would provide training and resources to educators, school counselors, mm-hmm. the people who answer the attendance line. You know, you pick up the attendance line and they say, oh, you know, my student is going to miss today because she's out for her dad's funeral.
Mm.
All right. Well, that triggers something. That triggers a collective response from the school. Right.
Yeah.
So everybody needs to know.
Right.
So that's a program that's actually sponsored by New York Life. It doesn't cost our schools anything. In fact, New York Life would provide each school with a $500 stipend to spend as they wish on bereavement support services. And that is something that we're offering. When I say we, you know, I'm just the middleman. I'm mm-hmm. just the little children's grief center. I have no dog in this fight other than kids would get the help they need, which helps us serve our vision.
Right.
And our vision is that all grieving children and families will receive the support they need to foster hope for the future.
Okay, it is time for a quick break. You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman, and we'll be back in a minute.
Here's the latest from the husband and wife duo, Twin Flames. This is one of the many songs on Twin Flames' new album, Omen, which honors the strong roots that this band turns to for their iconic sound. There are June music makers, and they'll be with us on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, we take on the Flaming Hot Cheetos controversy with a conversation with Richard Montañez. And we dive into why this is a tale about race, identity, culture, and also about the stories we choose to believe.
This is a dynamic, vibrant city full of so many stories that need to be told. And this is what they chose to focus on.
That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. Are you a grandparent who has suddenly found themselves parenting grandchildren? What sorts of challenges are you facing? There's still time to call in and tell us your story at 277-5866. And I'd like to bring into the conversation now Naomi Diamond with the Grandparents Raising Grandchildren program. She's the coordinator for Santa Fe County through the Las Cumbres Community Services. Good morning, Naomi.
Good morning, Ty.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Now, as Jade mentioned, 1 in 10 New Mexico children is facing some sort of bereavement, and oftentimes it's the grandparents who step up to take care of the children who have suddenly lost a parent. Can you tell me about some of the circumstances that can lead to a grandparent becoming a primary caregiver? Obviously, death is one of them.
Yes, I certainly can. Yes, death of a parent is certainly one of the major, I would say the major loss in mm-hmm. a child's life. And grandchildren may end up coming to a grandparent there is no other, you know, family member mm-hmm. that can take care or raise the grandchild. Other situations are, domestic violence in the home.
Mm-hmm.
So the child is in danger and may need to be removed and placed with either a grandparent or other family relative, kin that wants to step up and take care of the child.
Right.
Other situations like incarceration
mm-hmm.
of a parent or both parents comes up also from time to time in our state, and that can also lead the child to end up, you know, being fostered by a grandparent
right.
or other family relative. Those are just a few examples.
What sorts of challenges do these grandparents deal with when they find themselves in this situation?
Well, a lot of times the grandparents are caught off guard. They're mm-hmm. actually, you know, totally shocked and surprised that this has happened to them. And, you know, a lot of them are not necessarily emotionally, physically, or financially, stable
right.
sometimes to take on, you know, the care of another generation and their family. So many of them, of course, are, you know, delighted to get their grandchildren, and they wouldn't have it any other way. So I feel like grandparents are, you know, the superheroes of the 21st century here, because right. so many of them come forward and say, of course I'll raise my grandchild. You know, I love my grandchild.
Right.
So, yeah.
And you shared with me a pretty startling statistic yesterday that 1 in 6 New Mexico children under 5 are being cared for by a grandparent. Is that an increasing number?
It seems to be a yes.
Mm-hmm.
It is increasing. I think that particular statistic, that last time that came up through the census was in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing, you know, more and more grand families, as we call them, coming into our agency for help and support.
And what factors are contributing to that?
Well, I think a major factor, unfortunately, is the opioid crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it is a pandemic in this country, and New Mexico has, you know, suffered from it quite a bit. And what happens is a parent will, you know, become addicted for whatever reason. And, you know, is out on the streets, is mm-hmm. not able to care for their child. And, you know, oftentimes it'll be CYFD comes in to remove that child and looks around for, you know, a relative who is right. willing to take the child and raise the child.
And I wanted to ask Jade very quickly. Jade, I assume that any situation, especially where the parent has died, but it sounds like even in this kind of situation where the parent wouldn't be able to be involved, it seems that grief could certainly be a complicating factor in the challenges that these grandparents are facing.
And the grandparents' grief as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the grandparents are grieving the loss of an adult child. And, you know, like she said, this is a sudden and unexpected event. Their whole life is turned upside down. Their retirement has changed. Everything's changed. But now they got little kids in the house, which, as we all know as parents, is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think grandparents raising grandchildren is an amazing program, and they do great things. And they also know that one of the programs we provide at the Children's Grief Center is a support group specifically for grandparents who are raising grandchildren, because there are so many.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, Naomi, when I think about, you know, the grief that these grandparents may be experiencing, one of their needs would be for some sort of mental health or generally supportive programs. Do those exist in the state for folks who, you know, can't pay for it themselves?
Yes. Well, our agency, our organization, Las Cumbres Community Services, is a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And we run grandparents raising grandchildren programs in 3 different counties, up in Taos, Rio Riba County, and here in Santa Fe County. And we provide lots of free services. One of the main things we do is offer support groups that run every month, 1 or 2 support groups in each of those counties, so that grandparents can come together, meet each other, socialize, share their stories, know that they're not alone mm-hmm. in their grief, in their challenges. And those grandparents find solace and companionship in these support groups. And it's just amazing to see what takes place when we offer this. And we're so glad, you know, we can do this for the grandparents in those counties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we also direct them to a lot of different resources that are available in each of the counties. So if they need legal services, we know where to send them for free legal services. Some, you know, for financial benefits mm-hmm. that they're entitled to once they have guardianship or legal custody of their grandchildren, we direct them to those resources as well.
Right.
So all our services are confidential and free.
Now, did you grow up in a family that doesn't quite fit the traditional definition of father, mother, and children? We'd love to hear about your experiences. You can still give us a call at 277-5866, or you can email letstalk@kunm.org. Now, Naomi, I understand that there can often be legal issues that make it difficult for grandparents to fully take on the role of primary caregiver. Can you tell me about some of those?
Yes. So sometimes the grandchild may, you know, be coming to the grandparent, but the biological parents are still around, mm-hmm. and they're not, they may not be, you know, able to provide or take care of their own children, but they may live in the home with the grandparent and refuse. They may or may not live in the home with the grandparent and their own child, but they refuse to turn over, you know, temporary or legal custody over to the grandparent. So that becomes, you know, a bit of a challenge for the grandparents. It gets complicated because they have to seek legal services sometimes to get help.
Right.
To get legal custody.
And I understand that sometimes computer literacy can be a real issue.
Oh, yes, it is. Some grandparents, some of the older grandparents that I work with don't have access to computers, mm-hmm. you know, in the home. Or if they do, they really, you know, don't know how to navigate your computer to all the different services that are online, especially throughout this year, past year and a half. Going through the pandemic, a lot of government right. offices were closed, and the only way you could, you know, apply for different services was to go online mm-hmm. and download forms. And so I worked with grandparents to help them, you know, navigate some of, you know, some of those issues that they had on the computer. And, you know, that's just part of my job. That's what I do, is help in any way that I can.
And can this make it difficult for the grandchildren who are going into remote learning during a time like pandemic, if they don't have, you know, a parent who could navigate the through the computer for them?
Certainly provides a challenge for the mm-hmm. entire family. I would say that, Ty.
Now, are there any initiatives to change the laws to make it easier for grandparents to get the support they need, or to assume, you know, guardianship and navigate these legal issues?
Well, you know, there's been a GRG, Grandparents Raising Grandchildren Task Force, that was initiated by the New Mexico State Legislature. Mm-hmm. And they've been meeting on a regular basis, certainly before the pandemic. They've worked on issues that will, you know, benefit and help grandparents around issues of adoption, legal custody, you know, trying to get grandparents benefits, financial mm-hmm. benefits, so that they don't have to go into their retirement savings right. to raise their grandchildren. So it's been a, you know, a very positive, influential group. And grandparents participate mm-hmm. in this advocacy for themselves. Yes, it's been positive. But unfortunately, you know, each year when the grandparents and the task force members go up to the legislature, mm-hmm. We're never funded. The grandparents are never funded in any substantial ways. With, you know, some kind of a monthly subsidy, so that they don't have to, you know, go into their savings right. to raise their grandchildren. And that's what's needed the most right now. That would be the most urgent need for the grandparents who are raising grandchildren in our state.
And if these grandparents weren't able to take care of the grandchildren, what would happen to the grandchildren?
Well, if they weren't able to, and the parents were no longer able to, and there was no other family member that would step up to take care of the child or the children, then unfortunately the kids would probably have to go into foster care. Mm-hmm. And that cost the state a lot of money to place these kids, if they can even find placement for many of these kids. Mm-hmm. And it would, and in many cases, I assume they would have to separate children, you know, brothers and sisters in the same family, which I think would have devastating consequences right. for these children.
So there is a sort of a service, if you will, to the state that's being performed but uncompensated.
Absolutely. There's a service to the state that the grandparents provide that they do not really get any substantial compensation for. And that needs to change.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the highest priority need that grandparents raising grandchildren have? And how can New Mexico as a state or as a society do a better job giving these folks a hand?
I think just being aware of how prevalent this situation is in our state and the growing need of grandparents for all different kinds of support services mm-hmm. For them and for their families, and certainly some changes in the laws of this mm-hmm. state to compensate grandparents for the amazing job that they step right. up and do over and over again.
And it seems like acknowledgement and, as you say, compensation in this case is pretty important for understanding that these families are important.
Well, the state does acknowledge the grandparents, mm-hmm. and we always get memorials. The last one was in 2019, but there was no funding attached to it. And we need the funding. The grandparents need the funding.
Right. So time to put the money where the mouth is.
Exactly, Ty.
Well, we are coming to the end of the show today, but before we go, I just wanted to go back to Jade for a moment and say, is it important that we as a society kind of understand that there are people going through these different kinds of family dynamics, and what can we do to be better about acknowledging this?
Well, that's yes. And I think, you know, again, I'll just go back to being humble and mm-hmm. saying, you know, that we cannot know and deeply understand and empathize with every single person's different family dynamic and circumstance out there. But knowing that is key. And we can say, you know, to the grandparents in our community that are raising grandchildren, this must be hard. How mm-hmm. can I support you? And we can say the same thing to families who've experienced the death of a loved one or are estranged from a loved one or, you know, have been rejected by their own family because of, you know, who they are as mm-hmm. people. You know, I think that, you know, we start with saying, I care mm-hmm. and I wish I knew how to help, teach me.
Well, that is all the time that we have today. Thanks to anyone who wrote an email to us. And thanks so much to our guests, Leon Powell, Jade Richardson-Bach, and Naomi Diamond. If you missed part of the show, you can stream it online or subscribe to our podcast. You can find that wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Our engineer is Marina Spencer. Zaylee Pollan screened your calls, and Megan Kamrick produced the show. I'm Ty Bannerman. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.